1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Tony Smith and John Osher.
Well, at least John Osher should be joining me momentarily. I just texted him. He said he's walking into the building now, so he should be in the studio any moment. These darn non-radio guys, they think 10 o'clock actually means 10 o'clock. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Good morning, everyone. I am Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey on vacation today. He'll be back with you on Monday. I will not be. I am taking next week off. It is my vacation week of the year. I know I've missed a couple days here and there throughout the last couple of months, but that, believe me, has not been anything that resembles a vacation. That has been for medical purposes. And before you even ask, no, we're no closer to knowing what the heck is going on with my left arm and shoulder. But I appreciate you asking. So Mike will be back on Monday. I'll be out all next week, planning my vacation around the opportunity to go watch Team USA play in the Gold Cup in Baltimore next Saturday, hopefully in the quarterfinals if they can finish first or second in the group, which they pretty much do with a win tonight. So I'm all amped up for Team USA tonight. I got John Osher coming in. I turned on Wimbledon for him on the TV here in the studio. We never keep the TV on here in the studio, but John, I know, usually does the show with us on Mondays. And I needed someone to come in here and do the show with me today just because everyone else was bailing on me because everyone's going on vacation, believe it or not, here in July, because they know exactly what's coming at the end of the month. And so I put on Wimbledon for John, who I'm sure would rather be sitting home today and watching the tennis than he would be coming in here and doing 2 hours of Jaguars Today with me. Then he's late for the show before it even gets started. But John Osher will be joining me in a couple moments. We got a lot that we want to get into with you today here on Jaguars Today. It is a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on Jaguars Today. The London Evening Standard, if you haven't seen the article talking about Shad Khan and this whole really convoluted plan to potentially sell Fulham, which is the English soccer team that he owns, by Tottenham. We talked about Tottenham earlier this week because they're the team that is building the new stadium that's going to have the football field, basically, that they can move in and out, kind of like it is out in Arizona in the desert. So they're going to be the team where the NFL has come to a deal basically for 10 years with Tottenham to be playing games in their home stadium, NFL games going over there. The contract with Wembley is up after the next couple of seasons, so they needed a new place if they were going to continue that alliance. And there's an article in the London Evening Standard basically laying out, it's not even a plan, I don't know how to describe it, and we'll get more into it a little bit later, but talking about the idea of Shad Khan selling Fulham, buying Tottenham, and then moving your Jacksonville Jaguars to play full-time in Tottenham Stadium. Again, we'll get to all of our thoughts on that a little bit later on. Want to talk about Cinderic Marks and his rehab with John Osher a little bit, as well as a couple of interesting questions I felt like he got in the Ozone earlier this week. So we'll talk about all that with John Osher when he arrives. Ken Stabler, obviously the big news in the National Football League is the passing of Kenny the Snake Stabler. He is the inspiration, we'll call it, for the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships question of the day today, which is, what is your favorite NFL player or team nickname of all time? So what is your favorite player or team nickname of all time with Kenny the Snake? That's pretty good stuff. The Snake is a pretty darn good nickname, as I welcome in John Osher today on the program. What's going on, Johnny?
And I guess you're probably, or I know you're too young to remember when Stabler played. When I heard the news of his passing yesterday, anybody of my era, which I grew up when the NFL really started, I can remember watching it in 70, 71, mm-hmm. vaguely, and then sort of came of age where those became my memories. And, you know, Stabler wasn't, I guess, a Hall of Fame quarterback, but back then when you were watching as a kid, you thought of him as one. I mean, he defined the Raiders in a lot of ways. And as a two-minute quarterback, as a guy who could control the offense late, I remember when he got the ball late, you know, you thought he was going to score. My first memories of watching a two-minute offense were of watching him. He was really, really good at it, and you know, was just one of those personalities. I don't know that you get that personality in football anymore.
Right.
I don't know that you really could in this day and age of social media, and I don't know that the Raiders were that politically correct back then. I think that it would have been harder to be charming with a lot of their antics. But I think that's true of a lot of old sports. But, mm-hmm. boy, for that era, it was a fun, you know, they were a fun team to sort of watch. I don't say they were my second favorite team, but if you didn't, if I was a huge Redskins fan.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't really care that much about the AFC in terms of, you know, rivalries. I hated Dallas. I hated all the NFC teams. The Raiders were kind of a cool team to watch because they were fun. They were the Renegades.
Yeah, they were. They really were the Renegades. And he was kind of the poster child for it. And I wanted to, yeah, I didn't get to watch Raiders football in that era.
Right.
For me, when I think about that era of Raiders football, probably the first guy, honestly, that comes to my mind is John Madden. Because he's the one that I've seen for my entire life around the game. I think.
And he did a great job and has done a great job of being accessible, being interviewable
right.
about those teams. So you see him associated with. You didn't see Stabler interviewed that much after his career. Some, but not. I mean, he wasn't a recluse, but you didn't see him out there a whole lot. So, yeah, you wouldn't have seen him necessarily since then. But during that time, I mean, it was funny. I was not surprised that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame, but I wouldn't have been surprised if he was. He was, mm-hmm. for a while, he was a guy who, you never worried about the Raiders a quarterback when he played. He was good.
No, he was. And like I said, I would think of John Madden. I think there's probably a lot of fans who watched that Raiders team who Kent Stabler probably was kind of the face of it. And I think the attitude of that Raiders team is what comes through more
sure.
than anything else.
Well, they had so many. They had Alzado played for them a little at the end of their really good era, I guess. John Matuszak, Cliff Branch, Pete Banaszak, who's everybody knows here in town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many. You could go on and on. But they Phil Villapiano, you always see him on any Raiders retrospective because he's fantastic on camera. But that was the team. I mean, the Steelers-Raiders rivalry, as much as the Colts-Patriots when Manning and Brady were playing, was a era-defining rivalry. Then there was the Cowboys-49ers. Steelers-Raiders in the 70s was big-time stuff.
Sure. And you talk
and
about
it was
it.
Hate.
You talk about a different era of football, right? Just there in the 70s, and I'm looking at Ken Stabler's career numbers because I was pretty sure he was 194 touchdowns, 222 interceptions, which
yeah.
probably is what hurt him
sure.
in the end when it came to the Hall of Fame. But he led the NFL in touchdown passes twice with totals of 27 and 26.
Yeah.
To
all
give
the,
you an idea of the right. difference in the NFL, you know, 30, 40 years ago and where we're at now with the way the game works. Now, with that 194 to 222 touchdown interception, he was 96 and 49 in his career. And I can't imagine someone putting up
right.
those kind of numbers
right.
and having that kind of record in today's NFL.
It was fun, you know, and I hadn't really looked at his numbers. And obviously, numbers-wise, you know, that stat's a killer. I just know when your team was playing the Raiders and you were up by four with 3 minutes left, you worried.
Sure.
So I mean, and that, you know, Dolphins fans of that era will always remember the Sea of Hands reception, that play.
There's like iconic stuff that happened around that Raiders franchise.
Yeah, well, and a lot of comebacks. Maybe it just seems like a lot of comebacks because I remember them, but like I wrote in the Ozone this morning, it always seemed like it was 6:45 at night and you were watching the NBC late game
mm-hmm.
and Kurt Gowdy was on the mic and you were watching the Raiders come back and he was talking about Stabler to Branch or Stabler to Blitnikoff or Stabler to Casper. You know, there's a lot of great players and a fun era for that franchise.
Yeah, and it was funny. You know, like I said, I didn't get to watch Stabler much. I know about, you know, the
Mark Van Egan.
Right. I mean, I've heard the names. I've watched the big plays, right? Like, I've seen the Immaculate Reception, which he and the Raiders were on the losing end of that after he had led a lead-changing drive.
I think, if my memory serves, I think that was one of his first, I think he had been a backup pretty much to that point. I may be wrong on that, but
I think it was.
So that was sort of his coming. You know, he had played at Alabama and was a good player. But I think he ran for a long touchdown in that game to give him the lead late.
Yeah.
I'm actually sadly old enough to remember that. I remember when that game was on and I was out riding bikes in Seattle. I was like 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard about the game after, you know, and of course at that age, you don't really realize what you've missed or what really happened, but I remember the day.
Yeah. And, you know, Sia Hands and all these different plays that they were involved in, the Raiders in that little era of time. Now they happen to be in the same conference as Pittsburgh, which
right.
is one of the best runs we've seen in NFL history, what the Steelers were doing there in the decade of the 70s. And so they just kept going head to head, and the Steelers would come out ahead more often than not against the Oakland Raiders.
And they played in the playoffs 72-73. 74, 75, 76, I mean, and
That's a lot.
I think it was five straight years. If memory serves, the Raiders actually got him twice. The Raiders beat him early a couple of times, beat him to get to the championship game in 76. But at one point, I think that was a record for how many times teams had played each other in the playoffs consecutive years. And they knew they had to get through each other to get there. And then there were vicious games. I remember the opener in 76, actually watching that one on TV, where the Raiders that year, it was one of those years they had sort of geared up and they felt like this is our year. And just a brutally vicious game in the opener that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Raiders eventually went 13-1 and won it all. The Steelers had a great team that year and you know, wound up having one of the best defenses in NFL history, but then got their running backs hurt late and couldn't get past the Steelers in the playoffs. But it was epic. Decade-defining stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny reading about him today and the things that people are saying about Kenny Stabler, right? And I'm reading about the way he would prepare for games, which was basically not to.
Right.
Like, and again, it's just the difference in how the NFL is played.
Just win, babe. I mean,
right.
Yeah, I mean, that was their
thing. They were like, if he studied a game plan, it was by jukebox light.
I mean,
that's the kind of guy he was. And it was, just, like you said, it just felt like every time they were in that late game situation, Kenny was going to find a way to put them in position to win that football game. Now, he threw obviously a lot of interceptions in his career, but it was kind of cool reading about it, considering, you know, in today's NFL, if you had a guy that did it that way, I'm not even sure he'd be allowed.
Yeah, every interception would be a crime, and every, you know, I mean, it's a different, you know. I don't know that you could approach it that way in this day and age. Maybe you could.
But it's cool to look back on it when
but
it was.
Well, you know, and eras are supposed to be defined in different ways. And his was a different era, and, you know, it's a RIP, so to speak.
Yeah, and so. Defined, really. I mean, that entire era of Raiders football.
Yeah.
You read about him today, it's like, yeah. I mean, that's the idea I have of the Raiders in the 70s.
Right, the beard.
Yeah,
and
it's everything I'm reading about. I'm looking for a picture today to put up on the Facebook page.
Well, I saw some picture on Twitter or Facebook last night. I don't know if it was doctored or not, but it was him giving the media the bird.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know,
yeah,
and
it's out there.
So that's...
it's him welcoming the media.
Yeah, so...
That's who he was, and it's kind of cool to look back at that kind of stuff.
And that was also a time where... Training camps and different stuff, you know, it was less filtered. And I think the media saw the players. There were less media, so they got to know each other more.
Sure.
It was not always ideal, their relationship. Obviously, I'm sure the Raiders got involved with things that they didn't like the media knowing about. I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say that probably happened with that organization
right.
at that point. So, you know, again, it's the stuff that makes people love looking back at the old days.
Yeah. If you want to get involved with our fan feedback spotlight question today, you can. We're asking simply, what is your favorite team/player nickname of all time in the NFL? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osier, at 1010XL Tyler, obviously in honor of the passing of Kenny the Snake Stabler, which is one of the great nicknames of all time.
Snake.
That's good. Yeah. Facebook.com/Jaguars today, also on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. You can get involved with the fan feedback spotlight any of those ways. Speaking of Snake, At Snake Island. Have you heard of Snake Island?
Probably not.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to get into Snake Island here in just a moment. Also want to get into, have you seen the article in the London Evening Standard today where they lay out a loose plan for how Shot Khan's going to buy Tottenham after selling Fulham and move the Jacksonville Jaguars to Tottenham? Have you seen that plan in place yet?
Hadn't seen that.
Any rumors around the building of this one coming to life?
I hadn't seen that one.
All right, we'll get into that as well as we continue along here on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey taking the day off. I think he's bitter because I'm taking a week off, so he had to get a couple days
bitter,
in.
Period.
John Osher joining me in studio today. I got the senioritis. It's going pretty hot and heavy right now, considering this is my last hour and a half of work for a while.
Gotcha.
So you're going to have to work a little bit to keep me focused as we go throughout the show this morning. Talked a moment ago. We're going to get into the story from the London Evening Standard here in just a moment, talking about the Jaguars and this quote-unquote plan.
Yeah, the plan.
That may be in place to see this team move over to Tottenham's new stadium. But do you watch any Shark Week?
I do not, no.
You just don't like sharks, or you got better things to do?
I guess I missed it when it first started becoming a thing,
mm-hmm.
and I never caught on. I never jumped on board, or off board, or whatever you call it.
It's fun, but sharks have always been one of my favorite animals, right? So I've read about them a lot when I was a kid, and then Shark Week came along, and it was like, this is the coolest thing ever. And that was, you know, before there were 15 channels where you could watch nature documentaries all day if you wanted to. So if you want to catch up on sharks, I'm sure there's stuff on all the time now. But Shark Week is still kind of cool. I know they've had a couple really good shows already this year. I've enjoyed the Bride of Jaws show they're doing, where they're trying to find this giant female great white, because they're still trying to study the mating habits of great whites. We don't know much. We have, like, our knowledge of the sharks has become so different. We used to think great whites hunted in the deep waters, and since the tracking and technology has gotten so much better, we actually know now they hunt in the shallows. So
that's good news.
Like, human interaction, the reason we've had as much as we've had with great whites is because they do hunt basically where we're going to go swim. Essentially, if we're going to be out, you know, right around where the waves are breaking, which is a humbling thought. But I also, like, people who freak out about that, I go, if you were going into the water 10 years ago, you just didn't know it, right? Like, now just go in with the cautionary idea of knowing there could be a shark around you, right? So be a little bit more aware of what you're doing and where you are, and be safe about what you're – your risk is not any different than it was 10 years ago.
No.
Going into the water, it's the exact same. You're just more aware.
Right,
the
sharks
danger.
Didn't read that report.
No, they have no idea. They've been doing what they've been doing since dinosaurs were on Earth, essentially, right? But they've been running promos for a couple shows throughout the week. And if you've been watching any Shark Week, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Naked and Afraid, the new season, which I don't know why anybody would ever want to be a part of that show. It looks absolutely miserable. Have you seen anything about Naked and Afraid?
No, and I haven't been naked and afraid in a long time, so I haven't really been that.
It is the worst. They put you on some deserted place, and you're naked.
I assumed that.
And you have to survive. They give you nothing, and you just go survive. For 40 days is essentially what the show is.
I would be afraid.
Why would anyone want to do this? Like, I've only watched like 10 minutes of it, and I'm like, no. Nope.
Naked survival is not really my thing.
Nope. So. It's just a bunch of blurs wandering around an island for a couple hours every week. But the other show they keep running advertisements for is this Treasure Hunters Snake Island. All right, and I was like, Snake Island? And they keep showing pictures of these venomous-looking snakes, and I'm like, this can't be like a real thing. I was like, Snake Island. It sounds like something made up, like some pirate named it that to keep people away from his booty, right? That kind of thing. So I Google it on Monday, and sure enough, Snake Island is a real place that happens to be off limits to anyone but like scientific surveys. And the reason for that is they estimate that there is one snake per square meter on this island. One snake per square meter. So odds are when you walk onto that island, every step you take, you will run into a snake of some sort. Now, there's all kinds of jungle and wilderness in there, so there's snakes up in trees and stuff like that to allow them to have more space to inhabit. But the theory is that the water level rose around Brazil, and this island got cut off from the mainland, and so there were no natural predators for these animals. So the snakes just started reproducing at super high rate. And it's this golden-headed viper, and it's extremely poisonous. Like, it'll kill humans within minutes. If they bite them, your skin starts deteriorating immediately when they bite you. One per square meter. And these idiot treasure hunters are going to go wandering around this island to find some fictitious treasure. I was trying to think of somewhere I would less want to be than Snake Island. I can't think of anything I would enjoy less than being on an island where there is a super deadly venomous snake virtually every step and hanging from trees. And by the way, I saw a video of these guys staying overnight for Vice, and there were cockroaches about the size of your fist all over the ground. Like, when they walked, you could hear them crunching underneath their shoes on the ground at night. This is hell on earth.
Now, this is not
walking into.
I think the best show might be to combine this and Naked and Afraid.
I don't think anyone would come away from Snake. I doubt they could get the Brazilian government's permission.
Yeah, probably not.
To throw Naked and Afraid onto Snake Island. It is the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, the video that I've seen of Vice going on there is just like a half-hour thing they did, because there's a lighthouse on the island. So the Brazilian Navy, like, every 6 months has to go out there and do some kind of upkeep on the lighthouse. It's no longer manned because people just kept dying that were manning the lighthouse.
Jesus.
But it's no longer manned. So they go out there and they have to do, you know, some kind of repairs on it from time to time. And I say just build a man-made island somewhere around there and get off of Snake Island forever. Leave it alone. I also found out that there are smugglers who will sneak onto this island because they can sell the animals. I don't know how big the snake has to be, but they can sell the animals for up to $30,000
per snake
on the black market. Yeah, $30,000, because this is the only place the snake exists.
I see.
It's right here on this little island. That
I'm not going there anytime soon.
Oh my gosh, it's the worst. Like, I can't think of anything I would rather not do.
Yeah, I'm not a snake. Yeah, I'm not a snake guy or a multiple snake guy.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I saw when they were wandering through the island, I was like, snake, 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 snake. I mean, it was just, ugh. And if you've ever run into, like, one when you're doing the yard.
Right.
Like, even a black racer, which isn't going to do anything to you.
I do a little hop jump.
Right. It scares you. Right. You're like, ugh. It's like, I'm glad the racer's there, because if the racer's there, that means the moccasin isn't.
Right.
So I appreciate the racer inhabiting the yard.
Yeah.
I just don't want him to surprise me.
Yeah, I'd.
Snake
We're
Island.
In agreement.
Snake Island. So if you've been watching Discovery this week and Shark Week, and you've been like, Snake Island, that looks fake. It's not fake. That place is completely 100% legit the worst thing that's ever happened on this earth. I'm convinced after seeing the video of it. Do want to get into this story with the Jaguars and a potential, quote-unquote, potential move to London. The London Evening Standard, James Ollie, wrote an article today. Here's the first sentence of the article, John. Fulham owner Shad Khan is considering selling the club and buying Tottenham in a deal that could also see his NFL team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, move into the new White Hart Lane. That's the opening line of this article. It goes on to not lay down any details or potential for any of the things that he said in the opening line of his article to happen. There's no real news about Shad Khan trying to sell Fulham. There's certainly no news about Shad Khan trying to buy Tottenham. And the idea of him moving the Jacksonville Jaguars to Tottenham seems really far-fetched. But nonetheless, James Ollie has written this article today, and when people write this kind of thing, we react.
Yeah, and I obviously don't know the right... I mean, it's Jim Woodcock, who is Shad Khan's spokesman, public relations person in St. Louis, immediately tweeted out essentially a laughable tweet at the story.
Yeah.
And unless a story like that has some sort of substance, some sort of even an attribution comma sources said. I don't know as much about how the London newspaper would handle such a story as I do American newspapers. But no.
Yeah. I mean, he basically says that there's these informal discussions that have occurred between Shah Khan and his advisors, that no contact's been made between Khan and Tottenham at this point in time, which, yeah. I mean, there's nothing, there's no right. backbone to this thing at all. I'm a little bit surprised they even wrote it. It's not a column.
Well,
this is an article.
There are different parameters and rules for what can get written in the papers there compared to here. This reads like a minor American internet report.
It does.
So that's sort of, I think, how much credence to put in it at this point. And Ryan O'Halloran, I think, said it best. I read his blog post on it this morning, that as long as the Jaguars are playing a game in London, and as long as Shad has this commitment to a game a year in London, to having a footprint there, to having a presence there, then this is going to be the kind of story that gets written. It's the kind of story that was written for years about Los Angeles. It's the kind of story that, you know, is written about any market that's out there. So fans have been through this game before.
Sure.
The way it's written should tell you where the story is in reality.
Yeah, which is not very far along,
right,
if it's even started.
Yeah,
it sounds right. like a guess, right? But look, from a bigger perspective, not talking about Jacksonville specifically, do you think putting an NFL franchise in England is a viable option for the NFL? Just putting a franchise full-time over there?
Only based on being there for a game 2 years in a row and seeing the logistical difficulty of getting there, getting back. I tell this story to people. The first year we went to London to cover the Jaguars, we went, and the exact time frame escapes me. I believe we went that year essentially arriving Monday afternoon, if I recall correctly, maybe Tuesday afternoon. Anyway, 2 days in, I wake up in my hotel room, 4:30 in the morning, and no desire to go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. I was going on an hour's sleep, and it's one of those, if you've ever had, where you're just doing anything you can to get back to sleep. You know you've got a full day ahead of you, and the body did not want to go to sleep. And so I didn't. So I went on an hour of sleep between this 36-hour period, and who cares? The senior writer does that, and
right,
nobody ever knows. The point being, trying to shift your body clock to that, and then when we got back, it took a day, 2 days, 3 days to really feel right again. Well, that's okay when you do it once. It's difficult when you do it once. I don't know about having to do that and having to deal with that on a full-time, every-year basis. And that's in addition to all the things in terms of headquartering the team, in terms of do you do it here for a little while? Do you hop the Atlantic for games? Do you have your training here? What do you do? So I just think that it is a very, very difficult thing to try to imagine a team doing full-time if they're the only team over there, even two teams, even putting a division. I just don't see how it could work.
Yeah, I think scheduling would be really difficult to figure out. And honestly, I talked a little bit with this with Mike a couple days ago on Wednesday, but in a country like ours where we are football crazy, right? I mean, we are manic about our football, whether it be NFL, college, whatever. We show up to watch these games. And when here at home, we're trying to figure out how to keep fans interested in bad products, right? Mm-hmm. When teams are bad, you're trying to come up with new ways to get people to keep coming to the stadium. I think there's something interesting for NFL fans who happen to live overseas about getting a different team, right? Like, you get to see three different games. It's never the same team, except the Jags are going over there every year, and they're building a little bit of a fan base over there, but they're building up something. If, say, Jacksonville was there and was going 4-12, right? I mean, how long are they filling up a place like Wembley or Tottenham or anywhere over right. there if this is their product? They know the next yeah. one's not going to be good. They know the next one's going to be this bad team playing more bad football, and they start having to deal with the same problems that we're dealing with here, only now you're making teams travel
yeah.
and doing all those other things on top of that.
Another issue, and I'm not saying the league couldn't grow through this, but in talking to Jag fans over there when I've gone over there, and I assume this is probably true of any team that has a fan base, all the teams have a small fan base over there right now. The Jaguars have some passionate fans there. Well, they come to these games from all over the UK.
Yeah.
They come from different spots in Europe, but especially ones who come from all over the UK have told me, we can get to one a year if they played that second, an away game followed by a home game, which I think is a possibility. I haven't heard that from anybody inside the building, but it stands to reason that's a possibility to have an away game and a home game back-to-back. It makes sense to experiment with that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, maybe we could do that, but they're coming from a long way away and can commit to this once a year. To try to do that more than that would be very difficult. Just logistically, financially, all those things. Now, eventually, if you had a team in that city, you would grow local fans to do that. But as you say, I don't know that there is a... You wonder about getting through the novelty phase to the passion phase, I guess, if you will.
Right.
And
I think there's fans over there who are at that point, right? And we interact with those fans that are passionate about the game of football. I think when you see the kind of coverage, and you've been there the last couple of years, I think there are fans that are rabid about the NFL product.
Right.
I don't think the country is. Right?
As a whole, no.
Right. I think it's a lot like when they come over here to play, like the Premier League teams come over to play friendlies. I pay attention to it. Right, I mm-hmm. really like soccer, so I'm paying attention to when those teams come over here and what they're doing and where they're going to be, and if I can get out to go see them, I will. But I'm not crazy about the idea of a Premier League team in the United States. Like, I don't need that because I'm not sure what it would look like
right.
in the end. Despite how much I like the game, I'm not sure that it would work that kind of way. And I get that there's a Major League Soccer here, and there's none of that over there. They
right.
don't have American football in the same way that we do soccer over here on this side of the pond. I don't know logistically. I can't see how that works. And it feels like it would be years away still, and I'm not sure that they want to put something in London to watch the attendance go down and down and down and down and down, which is what I believe it would do, especially if the product wasn't very good.
I agree with you. There are certainly people in the... It appears there are some people within the league who want to see a team in London work. I think it will be difficult to get. It'll be difficult to find that team to try to make it work.
Yeah, I think what they're doing is working, and I don't know why. I understand the idea of trying to expand what you're doing, as far as going over there now three games this year in London. I think that's working. The unique experience of going to see NFL football over there works. I'm not sure they need to expand it much beyond that. I think they'd like to, and they're exploring it, but I'm not sure that it would ever work at the kind of level that they would want it to when everything is said and done. Want to get into some Derek Marks, the video coming out earlier this week that he put up there with him running through the bags and where he is in that rehab, and how important is it for this Jaguars team and for some Derek Marks to be ready week one against Carolina. We'll get into that. John Osher joining me here on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony. We roll along next here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. So a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on Jaguars Today. Fat Tony, John Osher alongside Jaguars.com senior writer. I want to get into a couple of questions that I saw some fans have for you on the Ozone. I think it was yesterday, here in just a couple minutes. But before we get into that, I do want to talk about Cindric Marks, as he's still recovering from the ACL injury, basically 5 months removed from it now. Maybe going into month six.
Had a surgery, I believe, January, February, March, April, May. 6 months, I guess.
Yeah. 6 months. He put the video up on his Instagram that I'm sure you've seen of mm-hmm. him running through the bags. And he keeps pointing to that Carolina game. Week one is when he wants to be back and ready. And it's a bit of a tricky timeline. Who knows how much he's going to be able to participate in training camp, if at all. How much? I don't see him playing any preseason football, even if he is going to be ready for week one. Is your sense right now, at least, that you think he'll be available to the team when they play Carolina?
I've seen remarkable things happen. Personally, I'd, I don't say I'd be shocked. I think it's 50-50. You know, I guess I'd be a little surprised because that is a quick turnaround. But I was also surprised that Tony Boselli made the Pro Bowl the year that after he tore his ACL at the end of the season. I've been surprised by things with ACL so much that the one thing about it is it generally needs to go perfectly, meaning you can't have any setbacks with the ACL, and that's sort of a 50-50 thing with players. Some guys go through, you know, Aaron Colvin, when he came back last year, told me at some point when I was talking to him during it or after he came back, yeah, I never really had a setback. You know, I seem to recall him saying I never really had anything that made me feel like it wasn't going to be, you know, it wasn't going to make it. You know, and when that happens, you can make it back pretty quickly. But it's such an unpredictable injury that it's hard to predict when it's going to happen. Cindric so far seems to be fine. He's encouraged by it. I've never talked to him where he has said that he felt like he was behind schedule. He feels like he's ahead of schedule. It's not realistic to think that the first time he steps on the field, or even early next season, he's going to be the exact same player he was before the injury. Historically, that just takes time to get back. Can he be on the field? Again, I still sort of believe that it's a long shot for week one. But stranger things have happened.
Yeah, and if he's on the field, it'll be in a clearly limited role. Even if he did get back,
right,
they're not going to overextend him
right
early, especially since I don't expect him to play any preseason, because what's the point of putting him out there and risking anything in the preseason? So whatever football he plays in the regular season is going to be his first football outside of whatever he's going to be doing in practice. So
what a remarkable thing, you know, medical science development, though, is, because when I started covering the league football, this is 22 years ago, it was still a time where when you said ACL, you held your breath and players, you know, thought that could be done, you know, the whole thing. And now it's to the point where we're debating, can he make it back for a September 13th game when he was having surgery in January?
Right.
You know, so there's no thought that he won't come back at some point. There's no thought with a. I shouldn't say there's no thought, because when these guys go through this, you have those thoughts. But realistically, there's very little reason he can't come back and be, if not the exact same player, very close, a high level player when he comes back off this injury. And that just wasn't the case.
Do you like the way he's handled it? I know we've seen some ACL injuries recently, and it's a completely different position with what RG3 went through, but he had the whole advertising campaign, week one, all that stuff that he was doing, the return, all that kind of thing. And obviously, Cindric hasn't handled this that way, and it's not that public a recovery from him. But there was a lot of pressure that RG3 put on himself and his camp put on him to be ready for week one that season. Cindric isn't doing it as publicly as RG3 was, but there is, it seems like, pressure from Cindric on himself to be ready to go week one against Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to be who you are, and that's who Cindric is. He's a guy who, if the media goes and asks him about it, he's gonna talk to you and tell you what he thinks is going on. if a fan stops him at Publix, he's going to talk to him and tell him what's going on. If he thinks people are interested, he's going to post it on Instagram, and he's going to shoot to get back. That's what makes him. You've talked to him. A lot of fans who are listening have talked to him. That's what makes him who he is. So you've got to stay true to yourself. As long as Cinderic is as open and as honest and as sincere a person as I believe he is, he can handle this sort of thing however he wants.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's not going to, for him, the only drawback to something like that is if all of a sudden you're sort of pulled into it, if somebody came to him and said, hey, we'll do this advertising campaign and we'll talk about this and you'll get money from it. But if you're not comfortable with it, this is just Cinderic being Cinderic. So as long as you're being who you are, you're not going to put undue pressure on yourself. So I don't really worry about his mental frame of mind. He's as positive and as strong a guy on that front as you can imagine.
I don't either, but it was kind of a similar story to what RG3
yeah,
was
sure.
going through, so it's worth throwing out there, but I tend to agree with you. I think this is Cinderic being Cinderic with what he's doing and how he's handling this entire rehab.
A very sincere way, I would say. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like I haven't gotten the impression that Cinderic is going on social media or going to the media when he's asked about this, sort of beating his chest and making any guarantees. When I've talked to him, he's always said, hey, my goal is September 13th, or whatever that day of the opener is, September 13th, and that's what I'm going after. And he said, if somebody pulls him off of it, if the doctors say no, well, he's not a stupid man. He's going to listen to the doctors. But as of right now, his intention is to play September 13th.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that intention. I'm curious to see what it's going to look like when he's back on the field.
Absolutely.
For a guy who his game is predicated so much on that quickness that he has
right.
inside.
And
how
I
much
did
is that
see comments
by the
from
ACL?
Fans when the video was posted, oh my goodness, he's never going to make it back. It looks awful. He's slow. This was the first steps.
Right.
This is early in the process, and it goes in fits and starts. Once they start getting back, it can be a rapid process. He's on the field. He's moving. He's putting weight on it. Don't necessarily think because he wasn't moving with cat-like quickness in this first video that he's not going to be able to make it back. It is a long process where you have to be smart. But there are accelerated points ahead, too.
Absolutely. That's John Osier, the fan feedback spotlight question today, asking you, Jaguars fans, what is your favorite, your all-time favorite NFL player or team nickname in honor of Kenny the Snake Stabler, who passed away yesterday? So you can send those in at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osier, at 1010XL Tyler on the Facebook page as well. Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Also on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. We got this date in football history, and there is a ton of birthdays on this date in football history, as well as the drive around the NFL coming up next here on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.